With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Another edition of The Mark. We have a special guest on with us today, and I'm really happy to have him here. We got some exciting news to announce to you guys if you haven't already heard. This is a special segment entitled, basically, Mission Thanatos, and we'll explain to you in a little bit what Mission Thanatos is all about. But in the meantime, I want to go ahead and welcome our co-host that we're going to have here with us for tonight, Jeff Ferguson. Hey, Jeff, can you say hello to everybody, buddy boy?
Yeah, hello, and hello to everybody that is listening to the show, The Mark, and, of course, my listeners on Jeff Trek. This is going to be a wonderful show. I'm very excited about the project, Star Trek Thanatos, and Peter Borgini, and all that. So let's get to it.
Let me correct you real quick. How you doing?
Hold on, Peter. It's Peter Borgini, by the way. Isn't it right, Peter?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
All right, let's fill you in. Okay. Peter Borgini is the executive producer with Lumberyard Productions. He's currently the executive producer for a new TV show that he's trying to put on called Mission Thanatos, and that's spelled T-H-A-N-A-T-O-S, if anybody's taking notes out there. And I'll read a little bit of the summary of what Peter has up his sleeve here. Mission Thanatos is a sci-fi series in the tradition of Star Trek and Babylon 5, and is in fact a hybrid of both approaches to the genre. It has all the adventure and excitement of series that have come before, but an increased scale of intrigue not seen in space, bearing sci-fi television for over a decade. Mission Thanatos is a sci-fi series in the tradition of Star Trek and Babylon 5, and is in fact a hybrid of both approaches to the genre, as we said already. It has all the adventure and excitement of series television that have come before, but an increased scale of intrigue not seen in space-faring sci-fi television for over a decade. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bring to you the creator of Mission Thanatos, Mr. Peter. How you doing today, Peter?
Hello, Mark. I'm doing real well. Buddy. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, how long have we known each other?
20 years since I was married to my wife, Lenny.
Yeah, I think we both hail from the Baltimore Shoreleaf Convention days, I do believe, when we're both pretty heavy into science fiction. I know you're probably heavier in science fiction long before that, as well as me a bit. But right now, I just want to let our audience know that per our advertising, Suzanne De Laurentiis, and yes, the last name is exactly how I said it, and you are correct in your assumption, Suzanne De Laurentiis has currently been called away to Paramount Studios for a meeting, and I'll let Peter talk a little bit about what that possibly could be concerning Paramount Pictures, but she will definitely try her best. In fact, at this time, I'm looking at our clock as in reference to L.A. time. She's been in that meeting about 30 minutes right now. As soon as she's out of that meeting, she's going to try and give us a holler. So we'll hope and pray that she'll be able to join us as scheduled. If not, we still have an interesting guest here who represents the whole project, and he's going to give us a little bit of what Mission Thanatos is. Peter, I'm going to give you the floor. Go for it, buddy.
Well, listen, I wanted to make a quick correction. It was said that it's Star Trek Thanatos by a mistake. I want to make sure that everybody knows this is not a Star Trek show. It's completely different. It is a complete different series that's grittier, that's dirtier, that's the underbelly of what Star Trek wasn't. And that's not a bad thing. And, you know, it's about a man's quest to clear his family's name and honor, expose the truth, and expose a conspiracy, and find his father's ship, the Thanatos, over 70 years old and missing and presumed to be destroyed. And this man's quest is going to take him on a journey that's going to be phenomenal. He is going to be fighting the very people that he was sworn to protect. He is going to be traveling to find this ship with clues that'll be amazing, that'll help him divine where this ship is, if it truly does exist. That's the important thing. He is being ridiculed by his peers, by his crew, and saying that you're chasing ghosts, but he doesn't believe that. His family name was trashed. He believes his father was murdered along with the original crew of the Thanatos. So that's where we're at. The ship is missing. He wants to find it, believes it's still there, somewhere not far from Earth. And Thanatos was developed as a weapon of death to hold true the ability for the United Earth Alliance and the Consortium of Spacefaring Worlds to control the other members. That didn't sit well with a lot of the alien worlds that were now joining and becoming part of this new alliance. The fact is they wanted it destroyed. So in essence, that's the story. It's a story of intrigue, a story of mystery, and you know, it's going to take you every week, or if we do three series of franchise movies, it's going to take you from movie to movie to movie into the very end and expose the great secret that will change this captain's life forever. He is an Asian captain from the island of Hokkaido, and there are only several thousand left of his original family. And, you know, of the original Ainu people. That was very important to me, that I have a man of honor behind the helm of the ship. So that's it in a nutshell.
Oh, well, let me tell you, I'm psyched. You sent me information. You've sent me a lot of photos of exactly what the ship Thanatos looks like, and you just recently actually sent me, and I'm sure this is secretive, but they can't see it, and we're not going to share it, but you actually sent me a production clip, a visual, literally a video to see, and I have to say that I am psyched, and I am excited about that, and let me give you the reason why. I was an incredibly huge, and still am, Battlestar Galactica fan, and I'm going to start from the original Battlestar Galactica fan, moving up to a massive, massive improvement of the current, well, not as recent, but the last Battlestar Galactica series. And when you mentioned it was grit, and how are you going to have, I'm assuming, some dark themes to it, all I could see in my mind right now was Battlestar Galactica, and I was also a huge, major Babylon 5 fan as well. This seems like, Peter, that you're trying to bring together all of the components of probably both of those series with an additive of a few more. Do you agree?
Yeah, in a way, I've always seen Star Trek as clean. It was the carpets were always vacuumed. There was no dust. There was no dirt. There was no grime. They were using a lot of Mr. Clean to keep that ship nice and clean. That's what we're not. Not to say that Star
right.
Trek was a bad thing, and it's good that they had that. What we are is this ship, if they find it, which we don't know, but should they find it, it's almost 100 years old. It's like finding a Model T and trying to race it with a Cadillac STS. So, you know, that's the whole point. This ship needs tender, loving care. If it's found, we don't know that. We need clues to find. And the best part is there are other factions and aliens that want it because of the war between Earth and the other planet, Malaeus. They want it to destroy the planet, and they want the ship too. So there are many other people involved in trying to get the ship before our captain does. So that makes it even more of a mystery and more of a drama. It'll grab you every week. You'll be involved in it. You'll be putting out information, tweets, and various other things on the website, which I'm currently building for it, missionthanatos.com and .net. So, yes, it's kind of in a flux state, but it's being built. It'll be able to join the mailing list, and there's a Facebook page right now as well. But we'd love to have you go out there and like it. But the series is something of a passion. Started 10 years ago, and I won't lie to you, it started out as an idea for Star Trek. But I was told by a good friend, Arnold Soloy, in the business, rip out the Star Trek mythos. Get rid of it. He says you'll never walk through the doors of Paramount or any studio for that matter. 10 years ago, this man was right. And sure enough, I'm walking through the doors of Paramount Studios with a non-Star Trek show. Amazing.
Well, if you folks haven't seen the website at all and you want to see, Peter, did you put those pictures or artwork up on the website of the ship itself,
not
or that's still a secret for the public? Not yet. Okay. Well, so the public's going to have to basically go by our word on it. This ship is awesome. This is not, like you said, Star Trek was clean. This is not a clean-looking, Enterprise-looking ship. It looks a little bit more of a downscaled Battlestar Galactica ship, not with its vastness or its flatness or anything like that, a little bit more compact. It has some interesting features to it that I was really, really enthused on, and I'm not going to spoil it, but at some point, hopefully, Peter, you can tell us exactly the usage of this ship and what it does and how it – what you explained to me of how it basically, quote-unquote, transforms into you-know-what. Let me ask Jeff. Jeff, you already interviewed Jeff Hauger, who is also associated with the project. What did you pull out of your interview with him in relationship to this show?
Well, first of all, I believe it's Gary Hauger, and Gary.
I'm sorry. I got Jeff on my. You're right. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So, it was a great interview. I had a great time with Gary. Peter, you got a good friend in Gary. He's awesome. But he did say that you guys were concentrating mostly right now on the outside of the ship and how it – and because I was asking him about would you have thumbnails and pictures of what you like – what you want the inside of the ship to look like. And I know he didn't really have – I don't think any thumbnails of the inside of the ship, maybe the bridge or some living quarters, and maybe you can figure that out later. Or did you have – did you have an idea of what you want the inside to look like?
Yeah, I do, but right now that's kind of kept under wraps. But the outside was most important that we kind of convey what the ship is. It's more of a cross between a jet fighter submarine and a sleek ship that is mean, because it is a weapon of war, and it was used to control. But I wanted the ship to have a different look. It's not an Enterprise. It's not a Galaxy-class ship. It has no nacelles. It's different, okay? It's dark, and it has a secret code. The number of the ship is 601014, and make sure you memorize that because it'll be important later on.
You have a drive section, a way of – it's not warp speed, but it's a different kind of propulsion.
It's called Vortex. It uses the moldavite, and which is a mineral that's found only in one place on the planet Earth, and it also uses Sintamani stone, which enhances its properties. These are believed to be ancient relics of our early history on the planet here on Earth. And I use those for a reason. Moldavite enhances the properties of anything it touches, being mean, being loving, being whatever. And they want to use Moldavite on the ship because of its Hades weapon, which can really cripple a planet and make life miserable for its inhabitants.
These elements. All right.
Hold on.
I'm sorry,
hey, guys.
These elements, though, are these real elements on Earth, or are they fictionary elements?
No, they're not fiction at all. The Moldavite stone is actually found over in Canada, and the Sintamani stone is that worshipped stone that believed to have come from the heavens that is used in Indian lore. Indian lore as in Eastern, not Native Indian, but actual Indian.
Hey, guys, if I can interrupt. Jeff, hold on, guys. I am going to slice through the middle of this right now, and I'll tell you the reason why, okay? You, Peter, Jeff, guys, we're geeks, okay? We understand, we know, we're more interested in the details of exactly what this ship does than most of the known people out there. But I used this analogy recently to somebody, and that was basically the movie Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, appealed more to a wider audience, and that was audiences outside of us, outside of the Star Trek geeks, the Star Wars geeks, the Babylon 5 geeks. It appealed to a wider audience, thus the full effect and success of its appearing on the screen during that time.
That's
Peter,
correct.
Peter, what I want to know, and we need to speak to a wider audience that's out there listening to the show right now, because we can go ahead and get into specifics of what the ship does, where the ship came from, what the bridge looks like until we get green in the face. But in order to make sure that our entire wide, broad audience understands the appeal and why they themselves should come on board with this series, I need for you to explain to them exactly what is it about this show, unlike the Andromeda, the Babylon 5, the Battlestar Galacticas, or the Stargate series. What is it different about this series that has not been seen on television yet?
Family. It is about the ship as a family, as a team. And it is about the characters starting to realize that they're alone and they are on a suicide mission. They have to stick together. There will be people dropping off the show. There will be people banding together who hate each other. It is about the universal family of us and about how we can be better if we stick together instead of trying to kill each other. That's what this is about.
That's very interesting. You made a mention there that there are going to be characters on the show that are not going to be around for the entire run. That's what I kind of read into.
I will not confirm or deny any of the accusations made against me. But hey, you'll have to wait and see on the next week's episode. But that's going to be something that, it's – you never know. It's real life, in their world. And it's not going to be the nice, clean-cut haircuts and everything. These people aren't a special ops vessel. They are part of the special ops dark fleet of the United Earth Alliance. And they are meant to look gritty, not wear nice, clean uniforms. Yeah, they got them, but they're like, and it's just a regular type of ship that they need to be like SEAL Team 6, or they need
right.
to be undercover, That's
right.
their mission. So that's it.
Okay, let's get on to the production value, the production aspect of all of this. Now, you've already sold me. You've definitely sold Jeff, but we're not the people that you needed to convince in order to bring this to light, to bring this to reality. You obviously have a big-name individual who has been convinced after, I'm assuming, reading the script, being sold to assist you with bringing this, and I'm not just talking about the individual themselves, but I also understand that a major studio is also interested in helping you bring this to light as well. Can you tell us a little bit about this individual and that studio?
Well, that studio could be one of three different ones, so I can't really tell you exactly who it is right now. But that person is Suzanne DeLaurentis. She is a wonderful lady that picked up on the document that I had presented to her. She is someone
Who convinced you to read your document, Peter? You said that she picked it up. How did she get it? I can't just pick up the phone and call anyone in Paramount. Well, actually,
no.
I can. But, I mean, it's just I can't pick up the phone and call anybody at Paramount Studios and just say, hey, read my script. How did you do it?
No, it wasn't the script that she received. She received a very large treatment from Mark Valinsky, a former doctor and my brother's mentor from 30 years ago. And my brother, Joe Borgini, a doctor, put me in touch with Mark, and Mark Valinsky said, I know Suzanne. I'd like to, permission to give this to her. A couple weeks later, he called me and said, you've got to call Suzanne DeLaurentis right now. She's very interested in your project and would like to speak to you. And I was flabbergasted. And the rest is history. We have a development agreement. That's all, not a production, just a development agreement. And we are moving forward to develop the series, find investors, and do the necessary things to make this come to fruition.
Yeah, guys, if you didn't understand, our listeners right now, Peter has got a aid list. Producer on board who admired his script as passed on. They will be making their assessments. I'm assuming if they haven't already made their assessments, to go ahead and greenlight this thing for the production of a pilot. I just have to say, a friend like Peter and knowing him for 20 years, actually seeing my friends succeed to this level is just absolutely amazing, and I am so proud of you, Peter Boy.
Thank you, Mark. Can I say something really important?
Always, dude. You're venue here. Go ahead.
All right. As Suzanne is, I am a disabled veteran. She's not. She's not a disabled veteran, but she helps veterans' charities. I'm a disabled veteran, and she's very happy to be helping me because of this reason. My whole thing is that I want to give back. Once this starts making money, I don't want to keep the money. I mean, I have enough to survive, but if I can give to some of these disabled heroes that have been fighting this wars that we've been in for 10 years and help them and help people with diabetes, I'm a diabetic and you are too, Mark, then we have made a difference in the world today. That's the important thing here. Is making it.
I agree.
Yeah. Let me briefly share with you a story about a friend of mine named Brannon Braga. He is the creator of several different Star Trek series, Mission Impossible. He was working on 24. He just got greenlit for his new series, Salem. Brannon, I was pitching to him back in 96, and we met. And I told him that one thing in Star Trek Generations really did it for me that he wrote. And he said, what was that? I said, when Kirk and Picard were on a horse, and Kirk said to him, you up for retirement? And Picard said, no. And he said, don't let him retire you. Don't let him transfer you. Don't let him do anything that will take you off the bridge of that ship, because while you're there,
right,
you can make a difference. That's it. While we're here on this earth, we as humans have an obligation to make a difference. That's been my mantra.
Oh, I agree 100%, buddy boy, and that's how it's good. All right, I'm still going for the overall appeal before we peel this show apart and delve a little bit into the crew, because I do want to bring up who you've brought on board. It's widely known by this time, but I'm just going to let you go ahead and announce that. But before we do that, I still want to delve a little bit on the legal aspect of how we get this thing done. If you can walk me through the step, you've already gotten a major producer on board. The script obviously is in her hands, has been passed off to a major studio. What happens next, Peter?
Well, basically, the script is being reviewed, and the reviews have come back, and there's going to be some changes made, which is expected. And
sure.
There's a few tweaks, and there's some different things that we have to do to help it along. And it's a good script. It's got a great story. It needs a few changes that are going to be done, and we're happy with those changes. And we are scheduled to go out there next week and meet Suzanne for the first time and discuss with her some of those things. And we are very pleased at the way things are moving forward with the PR. We're going to be releasing a public relations notification sometime next week about the primaries involved, myself and Gary, as well as a new press release of all the people that are going to be involved and more about the show in about 3 or 4 weeks. So just keep watching your internet, watch the website, watch Facebook, and you'll start seeing more and more about what it is.
Because of the information that you've already released on the website, you can at least tell us a couple more names of people that are involved. Can you not?
Sure can. Matter of fact, we got letters of intent from the following. Anthony Montgomery from Star Trek Enterprise. Garrett Wang from Star Trek Voyager. Let me repeat that. Garrett Wang from Star Trek Voyager. Cue applause. We have Mark Robinson, who was in Spawn back in 1997. He has signed a letter of intent. And we have a new actress. Her name is Dawn Noel, and she is at dawn-noel.com. She is going to be hopefully playing one of the female parts that are very prominent in the pilot. She's a fantastic actress. She's worked on NCIS LA, and she's working in Criminal Minds, and she's also been she's worked with Robert Wagner. So she's been out with J-Lo and Madonna and as a great dancer. So she's a young and upcoming actress that I want to try and help. And those are the four people we currently have with letters of intent. And are also, here's the big one, we are attached with, and we're waiting for the official word, but Tony Eldridge with Lone Tree Entertainment, who just got done shooting the new Equalizer movie with Denzel Washington.
Whoa. Okay, what's his name again?
Tony Eldridge. With Lone Tree
Eldridge, right?
Can I jump in here for a second, Mark?
Anytime.
A movie based on the Equalizer TV show from the 80s?
Yes, you got it, man.
Yes.
Denzel is playing Robert McCall.
Yes, he is.
Great.
And currently the Equalizer is in post-production right now, and I'm actually on Tony Eldridge's IMDb as we speak. He's got an impressive list of credits here, so hold on. Can I applause now, Peter?
please, cue applause. And cut. Okay, there you go.
There you go.
Take direction well, Mark.
Yes, I do. Thank you. Wait a minute. You're a writer, not a director, damn it. Hey.
I'm also Go ahead.
Agree. Just to review a bit, you have two well-known alumni from the Star Trek genres here. You have another individual, Mark Robinson, Dawn, who I, in fact, went on her webpage, and oh, my God, that's all I can say, and I'll let you guys go ahead and find her. But that was very, very impressive what I had to look at there. I went through a lot of torture to stay on the site, but I just let you know, I hung in there as best as I could. So that was very impressive that you have Dawn. All righty. You are expecting, with the script being in the hands of others, that they may, in fact, make some changes that could or could not meet with your approval. Is that true?
No. Actually, here's the deal. We gave birth to this child, and this child has grown up to be 10 years old. We expect that it's going to evolve. The whole purpose of these reviews and changes are to make this in a saleable condition. Yes, we've got some technobabble that's got to be reduced. It's mostly U.S. Navy because I was in the Navy and I based a lot of the jargon on naval speak. Some people may not understand that. So we have to be very careful about how much we use. There is some other things that we did that they need to change and some other things that, you know, have to be tightened up. We're expecting all that. But the core story is not going to be altered. That's the important part, and that's the part that I really find really good. These people are going to do their best to make it work, and we're confident that it's going to be done in a professional, timely manner, and we're going to have a winner here. That's the important thing.
Right, I'm sure you are, and like I said, I've read the script, and if I could touch a little bit on the techno babble aspect of it, I kind of pride myself on being in the middle in terms of leaning a little far to the right into total geekdom or leaning a little far to the left as being some of those folks who are, you know, finger pointers, why are you dressed that way, Star Trek, what the hell is that about, get a life, move out of your mom's basement, kiss a girl. I'm right in the middle of the fence, so I can, quote-unquote, go both ways. And that's the reason why I brought up the issues both to you and Jeff in terms of the technical aspects of the ship, of the crew, and that nature. And that's why I went right into asking you, what is so different about this show that we haven't seen already or heard already? And your response to that was family, which is very thoughtful and very impressive. I agree with you 100%. Even though that Next Generation quoted in the beginning that, hey, we got 1,000 crew members on board here and, you know, they have their families with them. I mean, the only family you basically saw half the time was Will. You said family, I think, in other respect in terms of Mission Thanatos, and I'm assuming that is the loyalty and the respect of the individual crew members to each other and not family in you know, in quotations, mother, father, son, daughter. Is that correct?
That's very correct. This is not a show about family. It's a show about joining together as a family would. And they are out in deployment for 18 to 20 months at a time. They'll only have each other. So it's a small crew complement. This is not a very large crew. This ship can be flown with a very small skeleton crew. But the fact of the matter is they have to work together to get things done. And they rely upon each other. They want each other to cover their sixes. And that's important to them. You know, you never let or leave a crewmate behind, and you're always there to pick up for them, to help them out, and that's what this is about when I say family. It's not, they're not related in any way.
Excellent. Hey, folks, this is NDB Media's show called The Mark. If you want to call in and speak to our guest, Peter, who is the creator for Mission Thanatos, you can write down our call-in line number here. Pick up the phone. We'd love to hear you. 914-338-0314. Once again, that's 914-338-0314. And if all of you are within earshot of what you're hearing today, you can hear the show while you are calling us. So don't think you're going to lose us if you get away from your computer or anything. Just pick up the line. Give us a holler. We'd be glad to talk to you, glad to hear from you. Jeff, you got anything you want to add today?
Yes, I do. And you talk about Mission Thanatos. Mission Thanatos. You got to get it right. And that ship, I did catch a whiff of it, and it does look like heavy metal. And I can't wait to see this thing flying around. My question is, you talk about the family and all that. And you've said that Garrett Wang is involved. Is he going to be that Asian captain, or is that what you want? Do you want him to be, even though things aren't in stone yet, written in stone? Or
that is the intent. Yes, I want Garrett to be Captain Zhao Chang. And Anthony Montgomery, we would like him to be Julian Vosch. He is an aquatic reptilian species, and he has lived 130 years and has adapted to Earth's air breathers, as they call them. He is from the planet Malleus. And so Anthony is very excited about that, and there is some aspects of Julian Vosch that you will begin to see unravel, and the way that they have a relationship between the captain and Vosch is very important to the core story of the show. Rosalind Chavez, a Puerto Rican orphan, she is the pilot of the ship, and she is very much attuned to being a loner, but she always clings to the fact that they are together, and she is knowing that the ship and its crew are the only family she has. Things about her past will become to come into play as well.
So back to Montgomery for a second. He's definitely an alien that is adapted to Earth technology, so he can be amongst the Earth crew. Is that the actual enemy aliens? Is he part of that alien race, or is he a double spy, maybe? Or may we see that? Or what is his secret? Or some of
you'll have to wait till next week's episode.
I am pleading the Fifth Amendment. At this point, you'll need to speak to my attorney. He's in Nashville, Tennessee. He will direct you to the proper authorities.
Well, he's doing it the right way, though. He wants to keep you guys on the edge of your seat, so you keep coming back week after week to find out the answers
what
to your...
What we would like, here's the idea that we would like. And on the website, you're going to have a place as the things start coming out, we reveal more. We want fan involvement, okay?
Okay,
we want
in what
to
way?
Help drive the show. I mean, yes, it has a beginning, middle, and end over a five-year season or three franchise movies, depending upon which way we go. But we want to hear the fans say, hey, look, we would like to see Vosch do this, or is he really going down this road, and how is it going to affect the relationship with Captain Chang? Hey, that's a cool idea. We would like to hear
right.
that.
Right.
And, of course, Rob Roddy will have a consolation prize for you at the end of the show.
There you go. For those of you that don't know, and I'm bragging right now, I've had privileged information sent to me by Peter in the form of a script, which I have read, and I actually love it to death. Also in reference to photos, CGI rendered photos of the ship itself and what it's going to look like, which is incredible. In fact, Peter showed me some renditions of some possibilities of things that are going to be attached to the ship, and I actually watched it in progress as you guys change your mind and rearrange items, the locations of various bridge locations, let's say. Let's go ahead and just say it, bridge locations and whatever, and I love what you guys have come up with thus far. Can we, Peter, talk about Thanatos's purpose? You've already mentioned, what did you say, the Hades missiles or the Hades weapon?
Yes, Hades.
I mean,
you
opened yourself up to an explanation of what that is or could be or what.
Okay. The ship was originally designed, and I'm going to go to and read it exactly because it's important that we get it right. And the ship was originally designed to be a control weapon by one of the admirals in the early formation of the Alliance to want to have great power. And it wasn't sitting too well with those alien races that were now joining us. So basically, the ship was the ship needed to be destroyed in order to sign a peace treaty with the various worlds. They didn't want the thumb of the Earth on them, and they didn't want a ship watching them and their every move. They wanted to be equal. And this admiral didn't want that. He wanted to have the power. So the ship was summarily destroyed. And there became a peace between all these worlds because they believed and saw the ship destroyed. That's where I will leave it.
Oh, Peter, you know I know a lot more to this story, and I was hoping you'd delve a little deeper into what I have read. But, I mean, my God, you got me sitting on the edge of my seat, and then knowing more of what you haven't said makes me want to hear more coming out of your voice in terms of this ship, and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
How 70
years later, another admiral sees the history of this ship and starts unraveling some of the clues that it may actually still exist. And he wants to have it too and have the power it wields and start seeing the fact that, oh, God, if I had that, the things I could do, you know. But unfortunately...
Right, and that's exactly... Go ahead.
Yeah, unfortunately, that admiral is, he is the mentor of our present captain.
Right, okay.
That's the interesting thing.
You left me open with a gap for me to slide right on into there, Peter, and that's exactly what I was hoping that you would talk about, because... This is, if our audience haven't picked up on this yet, this is a story that's going to happen in two time zones. Am I correct on that, Peter?
Yes, it's going to happen in the earlier 70 years prior, in year 2242, and then 70 to 80 years later it's going to happen. So we're going to have flashback episodes. We're going to have themes of things. There may even be what possibly we talked about, apparitions, or what the crew believes. Uh-oh, darn it, there was a spoiler there. I'll shut up now.
No, you leapt right into that. Hey, Jeff, are you keeping up with this? I don't know if you were told this much of it, but with a show that will basically be cut into two different, you know, time travel episodes here. Of course, there's no time travel involved, but let's just say it's past and future. How do you feel? What do you think about this?
Well, first of all, I am a big fan of period pieces. That being said, I am also a huge fan of shows Highlander, they always did these flashbacks. So this sounds like it's going to be an interesting present-day scenario where they show flashbacks to the original part of the storyline. But there are, you're saying there's 70 years difference here. There's a 70-year gap. And that is a big gap. And I have a big question. Why haven't Earth and its alliance developed ships much more devastating since then? Did they plateau around that same early time, and this never really evolved even further? Or what makes that ship so devastating or so important that people want to get their hands on it? Because they've come so far in so many years into the future, you would think that would be archaic and out of date and not really important. How do you get that ship to be important? What's that thing?
Okay, let's put it this way. When we dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki...
You just took it right out of my mouth. That's fantastic. Yes, go ahead, Peter.
Have we ever done it again to anyone?
Right, right.
Wouldn't that prove the United States had ultimate power? Whoever has power has great responsibility. Yes, from Spider-Man, that means it. If you have great power, you must have great responsibility. Have anyone ever dropped a bomb on any other country anywhere in the world?
And
we
you did hit right on it.
We may have threatened each other. So the treaty says you will not make another weapon of mass destruction again against anyone for any reason ever.
Right.
That's
reason. Right, and you hit exactly what I was coming up with, Peter, because I was thinking the same exact thing as soon as Jeff finished. I was thinking of the bomb back then, and in terms of the threat of the bomb and the threat of having the bomb and the responsibility that's needed with having great power. Now, if we had rogue nations out there who had such power, they would be looking for world domination, you know. But when you have a responsible country, much like the United States, regardless of what your concerns or your political interests are or your opinions to that, I think we are the most responsible country that's out there right now. We have great power, yet we hold it close to the chest. We don't sit there and flaunt it. We know, you know, that we have it. The same as with the Thanatos. I want to also make point, guys, that Gary Hauger is in the chat room right now, and he's been typing. He cannot call in, he says, because his cell phone is dead. And, of course, our people in the chat room are jumping on him right now and saying, well, why don't you use your house phone? And, of course, his response was basically, much like people of modern technology, I don't have a house phone. And, of course, I responded with, that's the reason why you should have a house phone. Okay, so, Gary, I see you typing in there, buddy, but he also wanted to make a point that Peter, he said it's actually 40 years, I think, and not 70, if I'm right on that. And he also says that Thanatos is a story of two captains, one ship,
yes,
one big secret. And he also says here,
yes,
Thanatos is a first strike weapon deterrent, which is much like we were,
yes,
talking about in terms of when we were talking about the bomb. So, hello, Gary, we're,
yeah,
waving at you right now, Bunch Boy. We see your words in print here. Too bad you can't run to the local 7-Eleven and get on a freaking cell. A payphone. So let's give a shout out and a nice applause for even the first reading of the Thanatos.
I got to hand it to Gary. He and I have met each other over almost, I think, 15 years ago, and he and I became great friends. I disc jockeyed for his wedding in 2005, and he has been a very important part of this storyline, and I am grateful to him for the things that he has done.
Well, that's fantastic. That's nice to hear. Props out to you, Gary. Just gave you huge props here. I'm really, look, he types "aww" in the chat room right now. Enough of the romance. Let's get back
down. You can hear me there, Nanook of the North.
I wanted to thank Gary one more time for joining Jeff Trek this past Saturday. If you're out there, listeners, and you haven't heard Jeff Trek's past Saturday's show, tune in. It's another side of the Thanatos story. A lot of things are the same, but there's other things that are different. And, Gary, thank you so, so much, and thank you for joining this show.
Yeah, what Jeff is referring to when he says tune in, you can get a copy of that program that Jeff hosted last Saturday, and you can play it at any time by just downloading the file. If you go into Blog Talk Radio and NDB Media, you can go ahead and look at the past, or we'll post a link of that past show on the Mission Thanatos site. So if you guys want to listen to the interview with Gary, you guys are more than entitled to pull that up. In the meantime, we are 45 minutes, approximately 47 minutes into the show right now, and we're still waiting for Suzanne to get out of her meeting with Paramount right now, and she did say she will definitely try to call in. If by any chance if Suzanne does not get on with us tonight, we will have her for another time. She has agreed to at least come back on, but unfortunately, she's doing some very, very – well, it's not unfortunate, but let's say fortunately, she's doing some very, very important work right now at Paramount, and hopefully to the betterment of this endeavor that's happening here with Mission Thanatos. So fingers crossed that she'll call in, but fingers crossed that she's probably made an incredible accomplishment there at the studio. Peter,
yes,
you named four actors already who is involved in this process. One of the things that I've noticed in science fiction productions is the casting sheets, the casting calls. You named four. How many people in terms of a main cast? And most production groups have, you know, I think, and correct me on this, maybe a maximum cast of 9 people. I'm sure there's been probably more, but I think to have a quality script, a quality show, you have to have a limited number of cast members. You've named four. Are you looking for any more for additional work?
Yeah, we are looking for more, and there's going to be the cast of the past, which will have recurring, you know, sparse parts and important things that they'll be saying and doing, and you'll be watching, that will lead to various other storylines and character arcs as we move forward. So this is a double show within a show, and it's going to have that really cool effect of being able to see, oh, that's what they were talking about on the Ship of the Past, you know, something like
right.
that. My tagline is, in the future lie the answers to the past. So that's an important tagline that we have for the show here.
In terms of politics, Babylon 5 was known for its political atmosphere on that show. Babylon 5 was basically a United Nations of planets on a space station, basically. And you had your trivial, the Centauri are always fighting with the, what was Londo? Londo. Yeah, Londo. What was his racist, his race name?
I can't remember.
Panhead.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah. Jeff, do you remember what that race's name that the Centauri were always fighting with?
It was a very dark race, but I don't. It's been so long since I've watched that show, but it was a good show.
Yeah, the other race, Gary, I see you put up Centauri. Oh, the Narn. There you go. Thank you, Gary. It was the Narn. We did see the political arguments between the Narn and the Centauri always on Babylon 5. Since this seems to be a show that is going to be situated on a ship, are you, in fact, and I know you said it was 40 years in the past and 40 years in the future, but the time 40 years in the past, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of political intrigue about this ship, you know, basically orbiting planets, you know, with the threat of destruction. How are you approaching that situation?
Well, I am going to defer to Gary on that one because that is where he came up with the idea. But
okay.
I will say we're not going to be a politically based show, and we're not taking sides. It's going to be, yes, there's going to be different sides that want what could still exist, and there are people that still want to destroy Earth and people that still want to destroy the Regarthians and the Malayans and the Triberi, and there are various other species that, you know, feel they got the short end of the deal, and they have unfinished business, as you can tell, you know, that there are things that need to be cleaned up, and that's what makes it gritty and dirty and slimy, and it's just going to be, you're going to have to watch it to understand it and see it, and it's going to evolve as the series or the three movies come into play.
Okay. Jeff, you have a question about the crew.
Yes, I have a two-part question. I was curious as to the crew complement of the entire ship and the crew complement of the bridge. I have another technical question as well, but about the ship, but what would be the crew complement of the bridge roughly and the total crew complement of the entire ship? How many people fit on this ship?
This ship is designed to be mostly a weapon and an engine, and the crew is up front. The crew quarters are below. It's got a shuttle bay up front, and the Vortex or Transvortex engines are up front as well. I mean, the engines are in the back, Transvortex generators up front. The crew complement is roughly about 60. The bridge crew is going to be your standard bridge crew, captain, first officer. You've got your conning officer. That would be the person who runs the ship when the captain's not on the bridge. You've got your communications, your navigation. You've got your helmsman, the person who steers the ship. Engineering, would be a two-part placement in down in the engineering section and up on the bridge monitoring stuff when the engineering staff is down there doing their jobs. So, yes, not unlike Star Trek, it's going to have sort of the same type of complement of crew on the bridge as you would have like in Andromeda and like you had in Battlestar Galactica. It's a standard naval ship is what it is, and it has naval type of, you know, things on it. So that it's a carryover of the U.S. Navy.
Go ahead, Jeff. My apologies.
No, that totally answers the question. And for some of our Jeff Trek listeners that are tuning in and for some of the listeners on for the Mark that have tuned in, would like to know, just if you could just separate the two ships for a second and tell us, again, I know you already mentioned this earlier, but for some of those who didn't get a chance to hear it or make the difference between the two ships, one ship is named something and the other one is named the other. We have the ship that's being sought out and we have the ship that's going out. Can you tell us the names of both those ships or the designation?
Peter, there's three ships. Am I correct? There's three.
Right now there's three ships, yes. The Tenemura, which is a future ship, the Thanatos, which is from the past, and the Rossiker, which is captained by Harold Martinson. And the Tenemura is Zhao Chang's ship. That is his. And they are special ops, dark fleet ships that go out and do the business of, like, SEAL Team 6 or Delta Force, and they make sure that there's checks and balances within the Earth Alliance and the Consortium of Spacefaring Worlds. They don't exist, if you know what I mean.
Right. Well, you know, I like the idea of having a special ops team, especially in the future. It seems that as series go on for, you know, additional years, whether it's second season, third season, however long that it's been on, that eventually they will pull in a sort of SEAL type or Ranger type team or crew. Star Trek did it. Babylon 5, I think, in fact, did it. I think Battlestar Galactica at some point pulled in and have a special ops team. Makos, Gary said. Yeah, Makos. That was the Makos. Yes, very good. Thank you, Gary. To bring those type of special ops team members on board a ship opens up the field to a lot of things that a lot of the fans and a lot of the viewers like to see, and which is the action sequence. Of course, we love the drama. We need to hear the techno babble. We need to have your occasional love scene. By the way, I know Dawn is you guys have her signed on for this show. If you ever need a love interest for, you know, Dawn, I think when I color up the gray out of my hair and my mustache, I kind of look, you know, 20 years younger. So if that comes to play. Anyway, back on topic.
You mean when we bring aboard Morgan Freeman, you mean?
Oh, my goodness.
No,
okay, if you
guys... No. I mean, it's the older version of you, right?
Hey, Peter, I think you're older than me, buddy, so shut up. All right. Anyway, so what the
heck? You're hilarious, Mark.
That's not even on my board. Was that you, Jeff? That was hilarious.
Yeah, it was. I should have done a double red alert. I'm sorry. It would have been better.
Oh, here's one for you. Whoops, here's one for
Holy
you.
Holy bouncing boilerplate is this!
Okay, now, anyway, to have that sort of crew on a ship kind of opens up the necessity, I'm going to say, for them to be doing, you know, away team visits. Is that correct?
Yeah, you could say that. They go away a lot. And they hope to come back too. Sort of like, you know, they do the business that they're supposed to do, keep the peace,
right.
Take care
right.
of the garbage. They're in the refuse business. They take out
there was
the
a
grid.
Show. Wait a minute now. There was a show that had a refuge team. I think it was called Quark. If you guys did not, for those of us that are old enough, what's his name? Richard Benjamin. I don't know if you remember
wow,
that series back
old.
In the Yeah, it is old. It's in the 70s. You guys need to Google it. Jeff's too young. He wouldn't remember that kind of stuff. All right. Let's talk about Gary, since he is unable to respond other than text here in the chat.
Wait a minute.
Here. No.
Hold on a second, Mark. Mark, is he unwilling to respond or unable to respond?
Let's hope he's unwilling to respond after what you have to say about him. How did you find Jeff? Exactly, where is he? Where is he located? You said northerner or something. I'm assuming he's up in New York. Where's Gary hails from, Peter?
Gary hails from Lisbon Falls, Maine. They're in a small town. It has only one blinker. They have outhouses up there still. It's quite primitive.
Wait a minute. So you're saying that your good friend Gary up there is, how shall we say, I don't want to call him anything less than, I can't find my music. I have music lined up for him, too, and I can't seem to find it.
He's either Hatfield or a McCoy.
Really?
No. It's the Munsters.
What kind
of thing? Munsters.
This is Gary.
The most daredevil group of zaddy drivers to ever whirl their wheels in the wacky races, competing for the title of the world's wackiest racer. The cars are approaching the starting line.
Okay.
First is the Turbo Terrific, driven by...
Yeah, that's probably
Gary did his first Iditarod a few years ago, man. It's pretty cool.
Really?
He did real well after he got lost. But anyway, they found him. He was good. have Gary confirm that on the chat if he likes. He's writing me right now and telling me go. He said go suck an egg. That's okay. All right.
Yeah, he's responding to your indoor plumbing jokes right now. Mission Thanatos. Those of you guys. Mission Thanatos, for you guys that are probably just joining us right now, is an endeavor put together by Peter and with Gary's involvement, and who has picked up a major hitter in the name of Suzanne De Laurentiis, who we are still awaiting her call, and hopefully she will be able to call in. Mission Thanatos is a sci-fi series in the tradition of other sci-fi spaceship series. It has all the adventure and excitement of series that have come before, but an increased scale of intrigue not seen in spacefaring sci-fi television for over a decade. The series concept was also conceived with a definitive end to allow for definitive planning and cost management. The story would span 5 full seasons and live ever after on Blu-ray, syndication, and VOD. Hey, Peter, who wrote this website for you?
The website? You're reading from my website?
Yes, I am. No, not your personal website. I'm actually reading from the Thanatos website.
Yeah, I did that. That's my website. I built it. Yeah.
Yeah. You might want to start sending me all your texts before you put it up next time, buddy boy. Nonetheless, that
you
is
don't like
Mission
it?
Thanatos. Oh, no. I think it's fantastic. Okay, what else can you tell us about the show in terms of go ahead.
Let me tell you, we have an Emmy, British and Israeli award-winning composer, Misha Siegel, composing the theme and the score for the show. He has come on board, and he is a great man. He's got a jazz background, classical. He is a wonderful man. Look him up on MishaSiegel.com. That's M-I-S-H-A Siegel, S-E-G-A-L.com. And Misha is doing a fantastic job.
I am on his website as we speak. And you're right, Emmy Award, Brit Award, Emmy nomination, Israeli Oscar, Israeli-born music producer and film composer. So this is the guy who was putting together the music for Mission Thanatos, correct?
Yes, sir, that is correct. And I'd like to shout out to Harry Duksch, who is in Berlin, Germany. He is the CGI VFX person that designed Thanatos.
That is fantastic. I'm listening a little bit to Misha's music. I don't think it's coming over right now, but his website is impressive. Wow, very, very impressive. Let's go ahead and talk about your CGI creator out there in Germany. How did you meet him? How did you get him involved? And what kind of work has he produced for you guys so far?
I met him through a mutual friend. Her name is Lisa, and she works at Lightspeed Fine Art. And Lisa introduced me to Harry. And
hey,
Harry
Lisa.
O'Neill, yay! And she said she will kiss you when you meet each other. Don't worry. She's already told me that. Anyway, she introduced me to Harry. Oh, she'll marry you, too. She already informed me of that. That's a secret you're not supposed to know. So,
actually, I'm talking to her right now in the chat room. Well, not in the chat room, but on Facebook.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yep.
I'm in deep trouble. I spilled the beans, Mark. I am so sorry.
No, she's just going to have to stand in line now.
So, but anyway, Harry has done a great job. I'm grateful to Lisa for introducing us. Poor Harry is using a 4-gigabyte RAM laptop that's 5 years old and a 500-gigabyte hard drive, and the poor man has done such fantastic work with limited resources, and it's amazing what he could do if he had a truly fast computer, and we're going to try and put in the budget for him to get a brand new system.
Well, I have seen the animation of the Thanatos, and from what I've seen, if that is a 4-megabyte laptop that he is producing this on, you know, if you just give him the world and let him run, my God, I think this is going to be incredible, because I did see a high level of quality of what I've seen so far, what he's produced so far. Very impressive, especially the flyaway effect at the end of that. I was very, very impressive what I've seen, and I can't wait to see more of this ship. I'm very intrigued in what I've seen. By the way, I got a message to pass on to you guys from Tom Julian. Do you know who he is?
Oh, yeah, Tom is our editor and contributing writer. I've known Tom since we went and pitched episodes to Jerry Taylor for Star Trek Voyager back in 1997. And he and I went out there, and we were invited personally by Jerry Taylor, the creator of Voyager, and we had a great time out there. And we visited the set of Deep Space Nine and the and the Defiant. It was pretty cool. Really nice stuff. And Tom is also the co-author for our book, Futurecast, which is on Amazon and Kindle. And I'm really grateful to Tom for the great contributions he's made for both Thanatos and for Futurecast.
Oh, awesome. That's a great plug for Tom. Tom says, take care. Keep up the fight. He says, Peter, I have to put the kids to bed. This is good stuff. You're doing great. I hear you talking about the Hades weapon was actually his first response 52 minutes ago that he posted. So he's listening to you, and he says hello as well. And I've gotten a hold of Lisa here. She's listening as well. You guys are awesome. Let me talk about Mr. Siegel again here. I just got off his website, and I'm intrigued. If you guys go to the Misha Siegel website, who is in fact been pulled on as the composer for the Mission Thanatos project here, his opening screen, his index screen, when you open that screen up, just listen to the music that first comes on when his page opens up. And if you cannot envision a ship such as Thanatos, and I know it's kind of hard for most of you guys not knowing what the hell it looks like in the first place, but just, you know, a small sports car-style Battlestar Galactica ship, and put that in your brain while you're listening to the opening music to Misha's screen, and if this guy composes anything near to what I was just exposed to, you are going to be thrilled. Now, let me tell you, I am a huge fan of soundtracks. My favorite composer being John Williams, and of course I like, you know, Hans Zimmer and Bear McCreary. Bear McCreary, who in fact was the composer for Babylon 5 type music. I am really looking forward to what this guy comes up with. This is incredible from what I heard. So go to Misha Siegel's website if you guys can. Misha, M-I-S-H-A, Siegel, S-E-O-I-G-A-L. Google will correct it for you. and open up that page and tell me what you think if you can. I was just thoroughly impressed. So who else in terms of the technical field for this show do you have or your intentions of approaching anytime soon?
Well, I've approached Rick Sternbach, and he and I are talking. He was a 10-time Emmy Award-winning visual effects artist and props designer. You can look him up on IMDb. I've spoken to Ronald B. Moore, who you're going to have on next week. And
right.
I've spoken to Dennis Matalone, who is the stunt coordinator for Castle right now. He was on Criminal – Without a Trace, and did all the stunt
right,
coordinations for – yeah, for all the Star Trek shows.
Right, right. Well,
so that's who we're talking to.
Oh, well, that's awesome. You obviously have a big lineup of people for this show. Also want to bear in mind this to everyone here that this is early in terms of its inception, even though it's 10 years in the creation with Peter, where it's finally crossed or getting close to the finishing line for this thing to roll into production. If you've not heard before, we have people from Suzanne De Laurentiis production company, Suzanne De Laurentiis herself, who has now attached herself to this project, and that's a heavy hitter that's gotten involved with this. I am looking forward. Let me ask you, Peter, if you were to pick a network that you would like to see this series debut on, which network would it be?
We're heading for the Sci-Fi Channel. That's where we're going.
Right. You know what? I'm going to be nice. I'm going to be very diplomatic about all of this and basically just say Sci-Fi Channel needs sci-fi. Okay?
That's right. that's very important you said that. And I had an Academy Award nominee, Joan Huntington, read the script, and she said, Peter, I loved every minute of it. The thing that I loved that you didn't have in it was no blood, guts, gore, zombies, vampires, or killing. She said, that's all
monsters
the
time
you see nowadays.
Right, Monster of the Week. And when Battlestar Galactica went off, disappeared. When Stargate went off, disappeared. When Andromeda went off, disappeared. When Babylon 5 went off, disappeared. My heart just got heavier and heavier and heavier after each, appreciation of a series that I got attached to. And I relied a lot on Sci-Fi Channel to bring me some really new up-to-date stuff. And I think you guys are going to be a good shot in the arm for these folks for its inceptions, because now I can look at it each and every week, for a new sci-fi series. Battlestar Galactica, I think, what was that, 3 seasons maybe? 4 seasons, if anybody can help me with that in the chat room. Go ahead.
Well, then they went on to Caprica, and now they're doing Blood and Steel or Steel and Blood, whatever. Blood and Chrome.
Yeah. Yeah, Blood and Chrome, what I actually loved. That was a great series, and that was, in fact, a flashback series. It was the early day Adama series is what it was, That was great, and I saw that online as well as I saw all of the web. It was a webisode, and I saw each episode online first before they debuted it on Sci-Fi Channel for the entire run. So I was really impressed with that. Gary in the chat room says, the goal is to be the big fish of sci-fi, the flagship sci-fi series. Let's see, the one they pump all the promotion money into. Okay. Got it. Hey, Jeff, I see we have somebody on the line. Can we bring him on? I'll go ahead and let you, since you've already – oh, guess who it is? After you added his last name, I know exactly who it is. Let me go ahead and pull him in if you guys are done talking. Tom Julian, is this you?
Yeah.
Hey, Tom.
How are you, sir?
Hey, Peter.
Good. How are you?
Congratulations, man. I just wanted to – I saw all the action in the phasers flying. So I just wanted to call you up and give you the best wishes I could give you, man.
What the hell is he talking about, Peter? What the hell is he talking about, Peter? What the hell is he talking about, Peter?
Mark, if you got a repetition syndrome or something? Okay. Anyway, basically, Tom and I go way back. We had drinks at Quark's Bar. Remember, Tom?
Yes, we actually did.
And Tom told me to shut up when we were pitching because he didn't get a chance, and he really was pissed off at me. But anyway, we're still good friends, and that's important. And it's a learning experience. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And I'm really grateful to Tom. He's made some great contributions to the book and to Thanatos in helping us out.
You still didn't answer my question.
What does that mean, Peter? What does that mean, Peter? What? Is that what it means?
There you go.
About the phasers?
Yeah, what about the phasers?
What are you talking about?
I was rhetorically just doing a thing that I was saying. The show sounds really great. Sounds like there's a lot of action, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, look. I know there's a lot about this upcoming, and we ought to address it as pilot because that's usually the first thing that's produced before it's ever introduced into television, which is the pilot. And I'm assuming there's only but so much that we could say about this show. I mean, I think we've said enough to give a little bit more entry to the folks who are listening right now that this is what they want to see. This is what they want to go ahead and wrap their heads around because, like I said before, I've had the privilege of reading the script. Thoroughly impressed with the script. Peter, you and I had a discussion about certain things in the script that I think the mundanes, as I call them, as we used to call them back in the early days of conventioneering, the mundanes won't be able to wrap their head around, and that might need changing depending on who else gets involved with the rewrite or the suggestions or whatever, what they would do to your storyline or to the script, not necessarily the storyline. But overall, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I know exactly why Suzanne De Laurentiis and her crew want to get involved into this and help push it along into production. But in terms of the pilot, this, I'm assuming, will be a two-hour pilot. Am I correct in that or not?
It is. The script is 97 pages long, and each page is equal to a minute. And then you've got, of course, extended description, action sequences, and then you throw in the commercials for the sponsors, and you get a two-hour pilot. So that's what we're
right.
trying to shoot for.
Yeah, usually a two-hour show yields about a 45-minute shoot. Do you think you could fit everything you need to, I'm sorry, an hour and 45-minute shoot. A 45-minute shoot would be a 1 hour. Hour and 45 would be basically 2 hours. So you think you could cover everything in an hour and 45 minutes?
Absolutely not. That's why we have to get greenlit and do a 5-year series so we can explain it over the 13 episodes per year.
Got it. Hey, Tom, maybe that's Tom. Yeah, we lost Tom on the board here, and hopefully that's him calling back. Jeff, you want to grab that? Unless you have a question,
it.
I can grab myself. Okay.
Got it.
Gary says it'll be about 91 minutes long without commercials. Well, I hate to see
that's
30
correct.
Minutes of commercials. Yeah, but I hate to see 30 minutes of commercials.
It's ordered up that way. It's usually around 4 to 6 minutes of commercials at every break.
I see. Wow, is it really that long? That's unbelievable.
It's really that long.
I sat in a movie recently, and I can't remember what the movie was. It could have been Frozen, or it could have been something else that I saw at the theater recently. And I know movie start times. The movie starts at 11 o'clock. I know the movie actually is not going to start until maybe 11:15. There was 30 minutes of trailers before this movie even started. It actually literally drove me stark mad.
Oh, did you see the commercials, too, about the popcorn and the cola, which we can't mention
all
because it's a big plug?
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, I think if you've gone to the movie once, you've seen everything it is they need to say to you or tell you about, about their theater, and that's all well and fine, but for God's sakes. Hello, Tom. Welcome back, buddy boy. How you doing?
I'm great.
Yeah, we lost you there.
Yeah. My cell phone decided to jump ship, so I called you back on the house phone.
Hey.
Sorry about that.
Let me tell you something, Mark. Tom has written a great script called Timberwolf, and we're going to make sure that we can try and get that into Suzanne's hands as well.
Excellent. Tom, you want to go ahead and promote that? What is it? What's it about?
Peter, first of all, that was amazing. Thank you for the plug just now.
You're welcome.
Thank you. God bless you. Timberwolf is kind of like you saw, if you've ever seen Aliens, and if you've ever seen Apocalypse Now, mix them together. And it's kind of like a Jason Bourne type superhero guy in space. You know, his mission is to, you know, he's sort of a battered ex-military guy who's ended up sort of in a backwater space station, just kind of like, you know, biding his time and sort of, you know, waiting for the, for the next thing to happen, when his ex-commander kind of goes off the rails, you know, and goes off to try to start a, you know, restart an interstellar war, and Timberwolf steps up to, you know, follow him and chase him and stop him.
Awesome. And this is book format, novel format, I'm assuming, right?
No, it's a teleplay format.
Oh, it will be a teleplay. Excellent. Yeah. Any backers on that yet, or anybody's approached you, or have you submitted it anywhere?
It's had some, you know, reads here and there, but no, like, you know, not anything that's really stuck at this time. So, you know, I've kind of been refining it, sort of, you know, it's my baby, so I'm a little, you know, it's a little terrifying to throw it out there. So, nothing yet.
Right. Just to follow up, guys, this is NBB Media's show called The Mark, and we are focusing on a soon-to-be production, a sci-fi production created by Peter Borgini and co-writer Gary Hauger called Mission Thanatos. It's been picked up. Executive producer Suzanne De Laurentiis has picked up on this, and she is running with it to major studios. As we know of, we're hoping that this will go into production very soon. This is the absolute first orientation, or let's say first preview of, although Jeff, who is my co-host here and who does Jeff's Track on Saturdays, has already interviewed one of the other creators on his show. We were hoping to have Suzanne on before we end our show, and it's getting towards that point. I was hoping that she'd call in by now, but I'm sure she will try her best to get to us. But other than that, Peter has been sharing with us his dream that obviously is coming to fruition here, and I am proud of him because, like I said, I've known this buddy 20-something-odd years up in the Maryland area. And I'm down here in Orlando, Florida right now, for those of you guys that didn't know that. So he and I have basically got around. We've traveled. I've known his wife. I've never been married, so he hasn't known my wife. Ha, 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 ha. But, Peter, I am excited about this. Is there anything else you want to add about this show? What are your ultimate hopes, your ultimate dreams for this series? I say show, but I'm gonna say series because that's exactly what it's gonna be, is a series. What's your ultimate hope or dreams for this?
To make enough money to give it away and help others.
You know what? Honesty, yeah. You cannot beat honesty, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, Peter is different. I mean,
no,
quality
no,
of the show.
Mean, Mark, seriously, man. There are people There are people less fortunate than myself. I've gone through some pretty hard times in my life. I've been on food stamps. I have been out of work. I have struggled most of my adult life. And I don't want to see people struggle. If I can make enough money to live on and then give the rest of it away, then I've done my job.
That's fantastic. You know what? And since Suzanne has not come on yet, and we were, you know, hoping she would call in by now, maybe you can speak for her in her stead in terms of the contributions both you and I, and mainly her contributions with vets, whether they be disabled, whether they're just returning back home to us. What are your thoughts and your dreams in terms of your contributions to the vets out there? What do you want to do? What have you done in the past in terms of that?
Well, being a disabled veteran myself, I have gotten a lot of help from the VA hospitals in Washington, D.C., as well as down here in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And what Suzanne has done is she gets herself involved with a lot of veterans' charities and is doing some fundraisers and things like that, which are very commendable. And I am grateful to her for what she's doing and the work that she's doing for the veterans. She is, helps the people that have come back from war that are needing assistance. She has integrated with the Oregon National Guard and the reintegration team and spearheaded by Master Sergeant Vinnie Jocks. And she got involved because she hosted numerous charity events for the organization itself. She is a champion of helping us. And I myself have given a lot of my time as a volunteer bugler for Bugles Across America, where we play taps live for our fallen heroes. Not a recording, not a CD, not a fake trumpet. We stand there in military uniform, and I do this because I love my country and I love what we do.
Absolutely, and that's very well said, and I appreciate what you have said. Okay, we're boiling down to about the last 5 minutes of this show, ladies and gentlemen, and unfortunately, Suzanne must be a really, really in-depth meeting there, which I wish her all the luck. I just got an email from hey, Peter, I just got an email from Mark, Mark Valensky, of course. And
yeah,
she says she's sorry. Suzanne says she's sorry, but she's still in the meeting, and that's all well and fine. We're going to have all of you guys back on again so we can go ahead and talk a little bit more about Mission Thanatos. Maybe she'll have some more information for us of her meeting at Paramount, if that's any relation to the show. I want to thank our guest. Tom, do you have anything else you want to add right now since we got you here? Here's your podium.
Well, you know, I called in just to wish Peter the best and to wish Gary the best and, you know, just to express how proud I am of him and all of his efforts. Peter has this capacity that I don't have, which has always been that he can open the doors, you know, and he can step in. And he can get people on the phone, and he can get the meetings and things like that. So his hard work has just, you know, finally come to a wonderful result of all this stuff happening. So I'm just so proud of him, and I'm so proud of it. You know, everything he's done, and you know, I'm proud of Gary and all that. So I just, you know, that's it. I just wanted to give my best to you guys, and also thank you. And just thanks for giving Peter the time to, you know, talk about his show, and you know, and all you guys too, for having him on tonight.
Yeah, that's fantastic, Gary. I see you typing. I'm going to read a little bit of what you said, but if there's anything you'd like to add, also, Gary, I'll go ahead and read it to the folks here online. Here,
I'm going to drop off and listen, but I just wanted to leave these last couple minutes to get out of the way and let Peter, you know, do his thing. So good night, everybody.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye.
Thanks, Tom.
Hey, good talking to you, Tom. Take care, buddy boy. Gary says, of course, he's talking about his phone. He says, I'll charge my phone for the next time. And, in fact, I think Jeff and I will team up together and have everyone back on again, you, Peter, Gary, and Suzanne. But Gary also said, what did he say here? Gary says, he's a great guy that is hard to say no to. I'm assuming, Gary, you're talking about Peter. hard to say no to. Yeah, it's, you know, my experiences with Peter, he's very convincing. He knows a good thing when he sees it, and he wants to have you involved in it, and that's the quality of Peter, because he just doesn't go out and ask anybody to get involved with anything that he's involved with or anything that he knows is going to come to fruition. He wants to call in people that he thinks that can assist him in terms of making his dreams become real. And I am also proud and privileged that he asked me to help him a little bit on this, although there's not much that I can do other than promote. But other than that, Peter, I really, really, really appreciate you bringing me up to speed and actually making me a part of Mission Thanatos.
Well, be watching. Thank you, Mark, for everything. I appreciate what you're doing and your radio show, getting the word out for us. And, Jeff, I the same for you, buddy. And we'll be on a show with you as well. You just got to Gary before you got to me. And but that's okay.
Well, we
we'll be on together.
Yeah, we split the difference here. And we'll basically go ahead and do a full show together. Hey, Jeff, anything you want to add, buddy boy?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. And thank you so much, Peter, for saying that. And like your thoughts in creating the Mission Thanatos, you, I, Mark, Gary, and Suzanne, and everybody else, we are all this family that are coming together to work for the greater good. You know, we all come from different backgrounds, but it's the same theme as your story. So, yes, I do welcome you back on Jeff Trek and on The Mark, and we're all going to get together, and it's going to be wonderful as we can bring to our listeners just how wonderful a production this is going to be. Again, I thank you very much for including me in your tight, wonderful little circle.
Thank you.
Yeah,
Go
ahead.
I said I wanted to leave you with something that I learned a long time ago. This is something I learned from Anthony Robbins, and it's this. Anything your mind can conceive and believe, you can achieve. And whether you're wrong or you're right, you're going to make it. But the thing to remember is the belief makes it so. That's it. That's it right there.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Peter Borghini. And with Gary Hauser's comment, he says, Peter jumps in with both feet, full of enthusiasm. That is very, very interesting. This has been Peter Borghini speaking to us about Mission Thanatos. We really, really appreciate it, along with my co-host here, Jeff Ferguson, who also does Jeff Trek. I'd like to thank all of our listeners who's joined in. Unfortunately, we couldn't get Suzanne. Suzanne's in the middle of a meeting, sitting down with Paramount Studios officials as we speak. Let's hope that it has something to do with this. I'd like to thank everyone, like I said, once again, for joining us here on The Mark from NDB Media. Thank you, guys. Thank you, everyone. Jeff, I'll talk to you soon. Peter, I'll talk to you soon. Everyone here in our chat room, thank you.
Good night. Good night.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.